Tokyo Game Life, a Tokyo-based video game podcast focusing on Nintendo and gaming culture in Japan's capital. Your host, Mono, here to bring you a slice of gaming life from Tokyo. Today's feature is all about the iconic Game Boy camera. Christopher Graves, a Game Boy camera photographer and modder, joins us as we chat about the device's history, Christopher's amazing customizations, and how to get that perfect shot with what once was the world's smallest digital camera. In the game section, I give some early impressions on the Super Mario RPG remake, plus some news and that sweet, sweet sales data. Let's get into the feature on the Game Boy camera with Christopher Graves. Tokyo Game Life, only on the Tokyo Beat Podcast Network. Today's feature is about the Game Boy camera, one of Nintendo's most iconic yet unusual peripherals. While it was a novelty at the time, many photographers today still utilize this unique piece of hardware to create amazing art, including my guest today. So guest, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Christopher Graves. I am a self-proclaimed Game Boy camera photographer. I've been photographing with it I've had one since the day it came out. I ran to the store and picked one up. But as far as posting online, I've been posting my photos online for maybe about 6 years now.
Thanks for joining me today. Before we dig into the history of it, I want to know about your backstory with the device. When did you first discover the Game Boy camera?
Yeah, I remember seeing ads as a kid. I was in high school at the time, and I just always had a fascination with the Game Boy itself. It was my console. You know, I had brothers and sisters growing up, but it was mine. So that was nice. And something about adding a camera onto it and it being more than just a game, a console was very fascinating to me. Things like the Work Boy and stuff like that always fascinated me. So when I heard about it, I had to go out and get it. So I ran out. There was a local game store. I picked up the red camera and the... I like the red color and the printer as well. I don't have my printer anymore, but still got my camera.
Let's rewind the clock a bit. So the Game Boy camera, it came out in 1998 in February in Japan, where there it was known as the Pocket Camera. And it came out June the same year in the States at $50. America got the Game Boy camera and Pokemon just a few months apart. And that's extra ironic because it was developed by Nintendo R&D1 along with Creatures Inc., the co-developer of Pokemon, and Jupiter, who most people know today as the Picross developer. Masato Kuwahara from Nintendo collaborated with the Creatures president, Hip Tanaka, to bring it to life. And Kuwahara would later develop the DSi, which also has a camera in it. So it was a bit of foreshadowing. It came in a variety of colors. You said you got the red one. And Japan actually had a clear purple design that did not come to the West. Mm-hmm. So I want to dig more into the tech. Can you walk us through what are the specs of the Game Boy camera?
So the images come out at 128 by 112 pixels, which is interesting because the screen size is 160 by 144. So you got just enough for a little frame around it. So, yeah.
Compared to digital cameras at the time, obviously it's much weaker. But for a $50 price point, do you think that was a fair price at the time?
I think so. It was one of the first digital cameras that was within the pocketbook of, well, children, essentially. I think that's what sort of fascinated a lot of people. And that's why a lot of folks are fascinated with it now. They, especially those that are into photography, they remember getting it as a kid. And it was their first camera and sort of experimenting with things. The Game Boy camera itself promoted playing with photography. There were little games in it where you can make animations. You can make little sections to where you can point the animated finger on it and it'd play a sound or change the image. And it was just, it was a way to play with photography. And I think that sort of introduced a lot of kids into photography and why the photography community just cherishes it so much.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of undersell the innovations of the Game Boy camera.
Yeah.
For example, it has a swivel on the top, so you can take selfies, which was, you know, not a thing in the 90s, but the Game Boy camera was there first. And you mentioned before, the photo editing, it's not so dissimilar from a lot of apps we have today now on our iPhone, where you can just, you know, put emojis on your photos and whatnot.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I read somewhere that the creators were inspired by those photo booths were really popular at the time in Japan. So that's why they had it swivel around so you can take selfies. And there was also this Sony camera had a grip on the left side that would sort of swivel up and down where the sensor was for photography. And then the screen was on the right side, so you can swivel it and point it up and down. And I read that was also an inspiration behind the creation and the swiveling of the eyeball section, as I like to call it.
I think many people think of it as a novelty device, but photographers such as yourself have really embraced it as an artistic tool. What about photography with the Game Boy camera captured your imagination?
I think the limitations are very fascinating. It only has four colors, so you really have to play with shadow and play with light. And one thing I like to do, I like to go take walks. I like to go hiking. And I've noticed that just the brown and green leaves are just hard to capture. So being out in nature, you really got to sort of, you know, have an eye for things and look for that deep contrast. And with black and white photography, contrast is a great thing to play with.
What are some things you need to be aware of when you are trying to take a great photo with the base Game Boy camera?
Oh, yeah. So some things to bear in mind. Contrast. Contrasting colors work really great. Keep an eye out for shadows. Light is very important. You want to make sure your subject is well lit. When it is, it does have the ability to adjust for low light. The problem is memory is not very high compared to a lot of modern technology. So the frame rate will significantly dip. So if you have great light, it's going to give you better control because the image will change much more quickly before you press the shutter button. So I think light is very important, looking for contrast, and of course, the general maintenance. I see a lot of folks there, you wonder why it takes maybe poor photos, but just a little bit of cleaning. Take a cotton swab and dig it around inside there. And I'm surprised sometimes how terrible a camera will be when I pick it up, and then just cleaning it out, and it makes a world of difference just keeping it clean.
Are there any subjects that are just more inherently photo-friendly with the Game Boy camera?
I think buildings and architecture is really great because they're typically well-lit areas. There's a lot of dips and bumps and things that stick out of buildings that make it really easy to photograph. Whereas, as I mentioned, conversely, nature is more, it's much more difficult to capture.
Now, you use quite a lot of modifications on your Game Boy camera gear. Can you walk us through your gear setup? What kind of mods and adjustments do you have for your Game Boy camera? And what kind of things can you now do with the photos that you couldn't do with just a normal base camera?
Yeah, so my main gear right now, I have a custom-built Game Boy Pocket that I use for my main system. I like the Pocket because it's small. It is the two bits of color. Whereas with the Game Boy Color, it's sort of, if you use a Game Boy camera and it converts it to this color mode where it's like slightly green, some parts are kind of reddish, and it just, it's kind of distracting. There are ways to work around that, such as when you turn it on, you can press left and B. And for a while I was using an SP because it folded up, it folded up nice. And that was really great. And then I pressed left and B, but just those extra steps are just a little too much for me, and I wanted to get in there, take my photos quickly. So I've converted completely to the Pocket. I've modified it pretty heavily. I've put a backlit screen in it. There is a large lithium-ion battery in there and a Type-C charger. That's mostly just for my own personal convenience. And of course, I put custom buttons in it, custom lens, just to make it my own. You know, so that's always fun. A friend of mine used a CNC machine to mill aluminum buttons. So I have anodized black metal buttons in them too. So they feel really nice and solid. That's really great. But as for the actual camera portions, nowadays I pretty much only carry two cameras on me right now. In the past, since they only carry 30 photos, I used to carry maybe four-ish cameras on me at a time because, well, 30 photos per camera is really not a whole lot. It's not like a smartphone where you can almost infinity photos on this thing, you know? So carrying multiple cameras was essential. However, lately I carry two of them with me, my Game Boy Camera Mini, which I've recently been sharing online and talking about. It's basically a Game Boy camera that I recreated. It uses some of the main original parts, the sensor, and the Mac GBD, the memory mapper, which I think are sort of the brains and the true spirit of what make the camera. And then the rest are essentially entirely new pieces. I basically took the regular size Game Boy camera and reduced it to the size of a normal Game Boy cartridge. And I like it because it's compact. It was mostly I was trying to solve a problem for myself, and it seems like a lot of other folks like it as well. But most often than not, I have the Game Boy camera with the 2-bit Boy Camera Plus 3D printed shell, which allows for one to put on a CS mount lens that allows me to zoom in. Right now I have a 5mm CS mount lens on there. It's actually for a security camera, but these lenses are really cheap and you don't really need a high quality lens. I think it's interesting because a lot of folks, maybe on YouTube, you'll see they'll plug in a massive zoom lens on there. Well, it's great for a novelty, great for clicks. I think it's not really practical. And with a sensor that low resolution, you don't really need anything too expensive. I think I paid $15 for this lens on Amazon. So like I said, really cheap lens. And then both of them are running custom homebrew camera ROM by a fella named Toxa. He basically rebuilt the camera user interface from the ground up. And it's really nice because it's more, I mean, I kind of mentioned before that the original was a lot more playful and there were games in it and stuff. And this is a more serious approach to the photography. And I like it because it's quick and easy and you can really dive in and control a lot more things than you could with the original camera. The original one, you can play with contrast and brightness, and that's about it. Whereas this one, you can actually dive in and adjust the frame rate of the photo. You can adjust the dithering, different sort of edge pixelizations, and even the voltage that gets sent to the sensor, which can affect certain capabilities with it. So you can really dive in and do some really great things. That coupled with a lens, you have a lot more versatility with it and you can take some really creative and artistic shots.
In addition to your personal mods, you have a lot of custom projects. The big one, like you mentioned, is the Game Boy Mini camera, which is easily in the running for one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Give us your pitch. Why did you decide to make this Game Boy Mini camera?
Honestly, it was a selfish project. A lot of my projects, I see what I'm doing and how can I make this a little bit better? How can I make this easier on me? And one thing I found while it is unique and really interesting, that big eyeball sticking out the top, I kind of felt it wasn't really practical. I didn't really use the selfie function a lot and I wanted to go out and take cool photos, but it was bulky. I had a hard time fitting in the pocket and it just, I kind of felt like it looked awkward, you know, sticking out of there at the top. So I wanted to try something a little bit different. And so I wanted something a little more pocket friendly, honestly. So I looked into it, tried to see different ways. And you may have seen in the past, I've made different iterations of this mini camera before I finally landed on this version. Some of them used the original sensor PCB. Some of them had like a macro capability where you can adjust the original lens inside there. But I decided, let's just put it all on one single circuit board. So yeah, it was basically just a selfish project for an easier pocket carry. And a lot of folks seem to like it.
Yeah, listeners, if you can't visualize it, it looks like a very authentic Game Boy cart, but all the camera is inserted into it. And it has this really cool design because it's a black cart and it has this very like old school retro rainbow logo. Did you create the design for the cart?
I did the whole thing from scratch. Backing up a little bit, the original is based off of a friend of mine's design. He goes by HDR online, and he made a version of the Game Boy camera cartridge that is reflashable with custom ROMs. The original idea behind his version of this custom circuit board was so that folks could experience the Zelda, the gold Game Boy camera ROM, without having to pay several thousands of dollars to find a used one online because they're very rare. There's some controversy whether there's 1,000 of them made or 2,000 of them made. I think we found out that it was probably based on serial numbers closer to 2,000, but there's always some controversy which way it was going. And I think we're closer to figuring out there were more around 2,000 of them made. But yeah, anyway, his original idea was to have people be able to use this gold camera ROM without having to buy a gold Game Boy camera. Shortly after he released it, there was a big leak from Nintendo and the Hello Kitty Game Boy camera ROM leaked out. And so I think that kind of blew up his project a little bit and people got excited about it. Actually, building his camera was my first time taking off chips and transplanting them on new ones. I've done some minor modifications, just some basic soldering, but that was my big leap into trying new things. So anyway, I based it off of his design, and I mean, which is great. He did an amazing job and it was really fantastic. But I had some people approach me and they would tell me, you know, I really want this, but it's beyond my capabilities. I can't build it. Or I even had a few folks come up to me and say, I have a disability and I just am incapable of building this. Can you build this for me? So I decided to take some steps back and I actually rebuilt it from the ground up all over again, all on using my own research and stuff so I could build these for other folks. So
you made a detailed guide on how to build one, but you also do commissions for the mini camera, but currently all of the slots are filled. Were you surprised at just how many people wanted to pick one of these up for themselves?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I put up 5 of them. I knew a lot of folks were interested in it based on just feedback I got online, but I was surprised how quickly the commissions came out. Granted, I only put 5 of them available online, mostly because I've never done any sort of commission work or any sort of project of this scale. So I wanted to make sure it was something I could handle before doing anything doing much more than 5. But yeah, I believe it was within the first half hour, something like that, they sold out. So I'm going to have my work cut out for me the next several months. So
what are some other Game Boy camera related projects you've worked on?
Let's see here. Well, as I mentioned, I've messed with the different iterations of the Minicam. One of them used the original, basically redesigned the main board based off of HDR's work once again, and then reused the original sensor. I tried an iteration of that. It still had that big sort of bulb on the top, the eyeball on the top. I wasn't too pleased with it. And a friend of mine suggested in the Game Boy camera community suggested, let's make it a little more functionable. So we were chatting about it and based off of their feedback, I integrated a macro capability into it, which essentially just uses the original lens, just moves the lens. There's a mechanism inside that moves the lens forward and back to adjust the focus. So allows you to get close to your subject and stuff. But yeah, that was other iterations of, like I said, this mini cam I've been doing. I also worked on a completely remake of the Game Boy Pocket. I've been calling the Camera M. It is essentially a Game Boy Pocket cut in half, the bottom half just basically cut off. I got one that was completely corroded the bottom out. I didn't just cut a Game Boy in half just for giggles. I found one that was completely corroded out and essentially unsavable. So I cut the bottom half off. I remapped all the pieces, all the buttons, all the battery connections and things, and essentially shifted it instead of on the bottom, shifted that bottom section onto the right side and made it into a sort of rangefinder looking camera. I'm actually taking a step back away. I was originally going to make these files available online, but I've decided to take a step back from that because I was concerned, even though my Game Boy Pocket was corroded, I was concerned I would be condoning people cutting in half perfectly working Game Boys. And that didn't feel good for me. So I'm going to redo it in a completely all new circuit board. But yeah, I'm taking my time with it. I want to make sure that it's done right before and not just release a project that is not fully baked, if that makes sense.
You mentioned it earlier, but we really haven't talked about it. There's also the Game Boy printer. It also released in 1998, and you could print your photos from the Game Boy camera. Do you often use the printer with your photography?
Not very often. I do have several printers, and I've been playing with ideas of maybe doing some modifications with them. And I play with the idea of maybe putting it into a Game Boy and making a sort of Polaroid-like camera. I haven't quite done much besides sort of draft images and, you know, think of ideas and how to do it. But honestly, I don't do a whole lot with the printer. Nowadays, I will use a thermal printer to print my photos. They're a little bit larger. I use one called the Paperang, which basically it's once it's on my phone, I can Bluetooth it to the printer and print it that way. But as for the actual printer yet, I haven't done a whole lot with it, but maybe stay tuned. We'll see.
And speaking of importing photos, you could actually import photos into some games on the N64 disk drive, most notably Mario Artist. Have you ever messed with the Game Boy camera functionality with the N64 disk drive?
I haven't, no. I'm curious, but fun fact, I've never owned a Nintendo 64. I've always gone over to friends' house and played them when I were kids, but I never really had one, so I haven't had a whole lot of chance to mess with it. It's something I'm curious about, but I also want to make sure, before I dive into too deep of projects, I want to make sure that they're functional and useful, not just playing with things for the sake of playing with things, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of a long shot. And I think now it's very hard to actually import your photos to the disk drive. But I just had to ask for the disk drive fans out there.
I do know some folks that mess with it quite significantly in the community with camera. They will, that is essentially some of their main forms of getting the photos off of their their Game Boy camera, and just because they like that authentic using original hardware and stuff. So
yeah,
I think that's very fascinating. It's something, like I said, I'm not quite, I don't find myself using, but it's still fascinating nonetheless, I think.
Final question. We barely touched on it, but there are games on the Game Boy camera. It has Ball, Space Fever 2, Run, 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 and DJ. Have you ever played these, and do you have a personal favorite?
Yeah, I played with them a lot when I was a kid, maybe not so much anymore, but I do like the DJ quite a bit. Once, when I got a little bit older and I kind of understood, you know, those that worked in the industry, and when I finally realized who Chip Tanaka was, I've grown to appreciate his insistence of including it in the camera itself. So I think it's my favorite one to play around with.
Awesome. Well, the Game Boy camera, a really fascinating part of Nintendo's legacy, and something that people are still very fond of today. And listeners, if you want to get the most out of your Game Boy camera experience, you got to follow our guest. So Christopher, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm at the Game Boy camera. That's where I post all of my photos. I'm also on Threads pretty actively. Also the Game Boy camera, since it's the whole meta Instagram thing is sort of connected. And I'm also on Mastodon, Game Boy camera at glitch.lgbt.
And a lot of your photos are on GameBoyCamera.com, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes. I completely forgot about my website. Yes. GameBoyCamera.com. Some of my photos are there. It's where I have information on where other places to find me, projects I'm working on, and it talks about the gear I actually use to take my photos. I got a lot of questions about it, so I figured I might as well just put it all in one place so people can see it. So.
Are you ever afraid Nintendo is going to come after you for owning GameBoyCamera.com?
I wonder about that. I was actually shocked when I saw it available online, because as I mentioned, I have a Discord group where a lot of enthusiasts are on there, and I was looking up GameBoyCamera.club, and then I saw .com was available, and it's like, oh my gosh, I got to get this one. So I did. So yeah, so far nothing yet. Nintendo, the closest thing I've gotten to Nintendo being aware of me is Chip Tanaka follows me on Twitter. So yeah.
Great. So listeners, the links to everything are going to be in the podcast description. So check it out. Definitely worth a follow. Really amazing photography. You might think you know what you can do with the Game Boy camera, but you don't know. So you got to check out Christopher's amazing photography. So Christopher Graves, once again, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Let's take a brief ad break.
Spaceships,
magic swords,
intergalactic empires,
dead gods,
and creatures from beyond the moon.
What mad universe could contain all these fantastic visions?
What Mad Universe is a bi-weekly podcast
delving into the misty origins of sci-fi and fantasy, pop culture and genre tropes.
Take a cosmic trip on What Mad Universe Podcast, now on the Tokyo Beat Podcast Network.
Super Mario RPG, the remake of the 1996 game, is now out on Nintendo Switch. Announced out of nowhere during the June Direct, we went literally months before we figured out who was even working on this thing. Why the secrecy? Who knows, but the game industry in general is very protective about this kind of thing. How many times have you seen voice actors announce that they are in a game the day the game comes out? But now we know that the developer is Art Piazza, a Tokyo-based developer known for the Dragon Quest remakes. In retrospect, this seems incredibly obvious, despite the fact that I saw literally zero people guess them. Super Mario RPG is partly a Square property, so yeah, those guys who remake a bunch of Square Enix games would probably be a logical choice. But now, I think they are on the radar for a lot of Nintendo fans these days when it comes to speculating about upcoming projects. Mother 3 remake? Maybe it's these guys, you never know. However, looking at the staff role, the game really does have an all-star team of people from various companies. The director is Ayako Moriwaki from EPD, who recently worked as the assistant director on Pikmin 4. Looking at her gameography, she's worked on Chibi-Robo, Xenoblade, Yoshi, and yes, even Mario and Luigi, so a bit of foreshadowing there. It's cool to see yet another female director at Nintendo. Aya Kyogoku of Animal Crossing is the ultimate example, but I can't think of many others. Risa Tabata also works on a lot of games, but I don't think she's ever been credited as the director. Another notable game in the credits is Taro Kudo, who originally worked at Konami in Square and then helped form Love to Leak before moving on to Vanpool, which sadly shut down earlier this year. But he is credited as the event director and writer, similar to his credit on the original game. So he is popping up in games despite Vanpool shuttering. And a crazier credit, Tetsuya Nomura from Square is listed as character supervisor, a role he did not have in the original game. I would love to hear from all these people, but Nintendo has yet to put out a dev interview. Please, Nintendo, we need those. I really want to know what inspired them to make a Super Mario RPG remake. With Alpha Dream shutting down and Paper Mario straying away from its RPG roots, did Nintendo reevaluate the need for a Mario RPG? It's a game that has been released via the Virtual Console and on the Super Nintendo Mini, but it was definitely a glaring absence on NSO. I guess we know why now, but does that disqualify all NSO games from getting remakes? I mean, maybe? At least I don't expect any game currently on NSO to get a remake in the next 3 years. But despite the game being available several times in its history, I do think it's the game many have missed. It did sell well both in the States and in Japan in 1996, but that was a few months before the N64's launch, and PlayStation was already building up steam. It got a re-release on the Virtual Console for both Wii and Wii U, but before that, in the 12-year gap between its original release and the 2008 Wii release, Super Mario RPG is what I would consider an emulator classic, a game a ton of people discovered via emulators in the late 90s and early 2000s, which helped the legend of this game grow. Not that dissimilar from Earthbound. So unless you were an emulator kiddie or paid really close attention to the Virtual Console releases, it is possible that this game completely flew under your radar. It did for me, shameful to say, but I have barely played the original. It is one of my biggest Nintendo gaps, maybe the biggest. This is all the more ironic since Paper Mario 4 in 64 is probably my favorite game of all time. That or Super Mario World. It's a 1A, 1B type of situation. So there was always the thought in the back of my head where I wondered, if I played Super Mario RPG at launch, or at least before Paper Mario, would it be my favorite game ever? Or would it at least make Paper Mario seem less interesting? I have finally decided to confront that demon by playing the Switch remake. I'm not too far into it. I got to the Tadpole Pond, so that means I've collected one of the formerly eponymous 7 stars. But so far, I have nothing but good things to say about the game. It really does feel like a classic SNES RPG in all the good ways. You explore towns, you do some small dungeons, you fight a boss, the game stops you to play some random mini-games. This is what I want from an RPG. I haven't mentioned it on the podcast yet, but I have been playing Octopath Traveler 2 these past few weeks. It's an excellent JRPG, but there's no real dungeons or puzzles or music-related mini-games. So many RPGs these days just try to streamline the experience or twist the JRPG formula to a degree where it becomes unrecognizable. So it's great to just play a game that encapsulates what's fun about a JRPG in the 90s. I want to visit these strange, unique towns. I want to go through these dungeons where I need to think about my party's health and item management. I want to play random mini-games and do side quests. And Super Mario RPG has all these things. It doesn't have the scope of something like Final Fantasy VI, to call back to a game from that era, but the core mechanics are undeniably fun. Timing attacks, this is just so simple, but why is it fun every time to completely nail it and get that extra damage? I barely touched the original, so I'm not going to do a point-by-point comparison between the two games, but one thing that is new to the remake is that perfect timing attacks can result in an AoE attack. This gives you a bit of an advantage and makes battles go by even quicker. I can see some being critical of this aspect, since the game has historically been labeled as too easy, and now it's even easier. But I do like pulling off the AoE attacks. It's fun to kind of strategize your attack order so you can save a turn or two by whittling down an enemy, then finishing off with an AoE attack while you focus on a different enemy. If you've played another Mario RPG, it's not that dissimilar from those games' battle systems. In fact, all those games are basically just aping what Super Mario RPG established, blending in action with turn-based battles. The battle system in Thousand Year Door or Bowser's Inside Story is probably better overall, but the battles here are still a blast to go through. They still have that element of randomness, like sometimes getting a buff when you defeat an enemy, so battles don't feel tiresome since they are so quick, and each one plays slightly different, even if you're wiping out the same combo of enemies. One of its most signature elements is the very particular look of the game. The original's graphics were pretty ambitious, as the isometric viewpoint did try to make the characters appear like they are 3D. But now we've got all these fancy polygons, so the novelty of that is gone. But everything else that works about the art style is still here. Since the Mario art style has been standardized to a degree, playing a game like this where everything seems slightly off is pretty fresh. It's surprisingly faithful. The characters are all squished and scrunky. Many of the Toads have these weird shapes and sizes. There obviously have been some touches and updates to the character designs for enemies and others, but they feel like updates to the original concept and not trying to conform the characters to what Mario looks like now. I felt Wonder also had this philosophy of going a bit out of the box when it comes to taking a classic design and giving it a new twist without sacrificing the fundamentals of the design. Here, the fundamentals are a bit more stretched, which is fun because I've never seen Mario characters portrayed like this. Can you imagine if they just completely redid the graphics and proportions so all the Mario characters looked like the models from, say, Mario Party Superstars? I think that would really suck out a lot of the charm of the game. I will say the isometric view does have some inherent drawbacks, especially since you need to jump so often. And jumping in an isometric viewpoint can really be finicky. But there's not any real major consequence if you miss a jump, you just try again. I do keep jumping on enemies to initiate battles, but no, you don't get any sort of advantage for doing that, so feel free to just bump into them. The music, originally composed by Yoko Shimomura, who did return for this remake, is absolutely incredible. It's in the running for the best game music of the year. The score is now boisterous and symphonic, with a speedy rhythm that suits the game's high energy. The post-battle fanfare is probably my favorite song in the game so far. I mean, how can you not dance after hearing it? I admit it, I do listen to a lot of podcasts while gaming normally. Most game soundtracks are fairly limited in regards to how long you play the game. If you play a game for 30 hours, well, it doesn't have 30 hours of original music. But here, I want to keep my ears open, and I'm excited to hear all the music for each new area I visit. Those are some pretty brief impressions. I'm only about 90 minutes into the game, but I'll definitely see Super Mario RPG all the way to the end and share some more detailed thoughts on the game in a future podcast episode. The game is so simple in many ways, but also full of joy and has everything I want from a game. It even has a maze-like sewer level, everybody's favorite. It is really the last big game I want for the year, so hopefully I can finish this, go through the Pokemon DLC, and maybe beat Octopath Traveler 2 before we enter 2024. I wonder what Nintendo will release in November of 2024. Anyways, that's it for the games. Let's check out some news. How about a good old-fashioned sales breakdown? Better late than never, right? These always hit a day after I post an episode, so I'm always the last across the finish line, but I want to briefly share some thoughts on Nintendo's latest quarterly numbers. Switch sold 2.93 million in the last quarter, which puts the console at 132 million worldwide. For a console hitting its seventh year, that's not so bad. It should also have a pretty strong holiday, especially with bundles, so 140 million seems inevitable. 150 million might be a stretch, but if they do something like an aggressive price cut or go even heavier on bundles, it's not impossible. I don't feel like it needs to hit 150 to be considered a roaring success. I mean, the Switch has done more than enough to prove itself. For software sales, while these weren't part of the quarterly report, Nintendo did say that Super Mario Bros. Wonder sold 4.3 million in the first 2 weeks, making it the fastest selling Super Mario title. A great opening, and these types of games have very strong legs, so before you know it, the game will pass 5 million, then 10 million, then 15 million. The Switch won't have the runway it did when Odyssey or even New UDX released, so the sales for Wonder might not be astronomical, but I imagine it will still have incredibly strong sales this holiday and next year's first quarter. Pikmin 4 hit 2.6 million for the quarter. Now, some people are saying this is the best-selling Pikmin game ever, and while that's true in terms of SKU, 3 technically sold more if you combine Wii U and the Switch versions. But if Pikmin has legs, 4 will easily top that combined number, which is about 3.5 million. The game is still selling well in Japan, and half of its total sales have been from Japan. It's amazing how the franchise has been revived over here. Most people in Japan know about the game because of the Strawberry Flower song from the first game's commercial. Nintendo even specifically cited this in their report, but it's obvious Nintendo now considers the franchise to be one of their bigger IPs. Not Mario or Zelda or Pokemon or Kirby tier, but it still lapped a lot of other franchises under the Nintendo umbrella. I think the ultimate hope for 4 is that it hits 5 million, which is doable, but again, we could be less than a year away from Switch 2, which could crater Switch software sales. But Pikmin 5, or maybe even a spinoff, that's coming sooner than later. Some other games, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold 1.5 million in the quarter because, of course it did. It's now at 57 million and will top 60 million probably in the next few months. Other Mario games like New U, Odyssey, and 3D World also had a big boost, likely due to the movie. Tears of the Kingdom sold 990k this past quarter, which is a pretty big drop from its massive opening, but that game was always going to be very front-loaded, and we haven't seen its first holiday quarter, so I imagine it will still sell very strongly over the next year. It's nearing 20 million, but Breath of the Wild is past 30 million, including a huge 500k quarter. A lot of people were probably thinking, well, I gotta play Breath of the Wild first, which honestly, you don't need to. Will Tears get to 30 million? If it was released in, say, 2020 or 2021, I'd say yes, but again, we have yet to see what a Switch 2 announcement will do to Switch software sales. Another heavy hitter I want to mention is Nintendo Switch Sports, which has now sold over 10 million copies. I think a lot of people completely pushed this game out of their memories, but I do think it's a solid successor to the Wii title, and it's obviously a big hit with casual gamers. Nintendo has a lot of these sneaky titles that you might think came and went, but are selling hundreds of thousands of units each quarter. They still have a lot of franchises left that could be big casual market hits that they haven't put out on the Switch yet, like Rhythm Heaven and Tomodachi Life. Maybe they're saving them for Switch 2. Tomodachi Life as an early casual title on the Switch 2 would be a good contrast to Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing is a system seller, so having something similar to that on the new hardware would definitely help. Pretty crazy to think that we might only have a few Switch-only sales reports left. We will get the holiday numbers in February, and that might be the last holiday where Switch is the only Nintendo console on the market. Pretty wild to think about, but what a journey it's been. And Miyamoto has also gone on a journey all the way to Sony Pictures as he teams up with Avi Arad to bring us a live-action The Legend of Zelda movie. It was suddenly announced via another iconic This is Miyamoto tweet. It's interesting to see Nintendo return to live action, since many assumed that they would hitch their wagon to Illumination for all Nintendo movies. I've always felt that they should have made a big-budget animated Pokemon movie instead of Detective Pikachu to better capture the atmosphere and aesthetic of the series. Though I can see why they would want to do a live-action Zelda. These types of fantasy films typically do better when they are live-action. And yes, people are already going nuts with casting. I have no idea who they should nab to play Link or Zelda, but I'm sure they are out there. I don't know why, but I'm leaning towards Javier Bardem for Ganondorf. He was a monster man in Pirates, and he played King Triton in the Little Mermaid remake, so he seems a-okay with doing these wacky CGI fantasy films at this point in his career. Do you go with the Breath of the Wild aesthetic, or something more traditional like Ocarina of Time? Though the Wild series is way more popular, I think most still think of the iconic Green Link when it comes to the franchise. But this movie is what, 3 or 4 years away? We do have a director, Wes Bell, who is also working on the new Apes movie. And the screenwriter worked on Jurassic World, which does not instill confidence, but I guess we need to wait and see what random Nintendo Direct Miyamoto will announce the cast in. One small last bit of news, there has been a massive amiibo restock in Japan. Mostly the Smash amiibo, but some of the Zelda and Mario amiibo have also shown up as well. This seemed to be timed to the new Zelda and Ganondorf amiibo, but I'm surprised at just how many they've brought back into stores. Sonic, Cloud, Bayonetta, Banjo and Kazooie, Mystery Game & Watch, they're there for the taking. I'm not sure if this is just dead stock or they want to get it out for the holidays or if there will be a Smash bundle like in America, but if you are in Japan or coming to Japan, it's worth popping by a game store to see what they have. And yes, there's still plenty of deep cut amiibo, including Big Man, who is maybe the widest amiibo I have ever seen. All right, let's wrap it up. Thanks as always for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite app. Leave a 5-star review as well. This podcast is also available on YouTube, so like and subscribe there as well. I'm on Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram. Just search for Tokyo Game Life or find the links in the podcast description. If you like the podcast, be sure to share it with your friends and on social media. If there's anything you want me to talk about or cover, don't be shy, just message me. The next episode will be on December 3rd. See you next time. Matane!